Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. We're going to talk about the crazy train. My brother played that song, My Brother Pete, that passed away this year. I've been having such a heart to fight addiction in all forms. It can be so deadly. And one of the things that some people dispute is not an addiction like drugs or alcohol, but many people go through withdrawal from a relationship that's toxic. They get attached to somebody, and then when they lose that person or that person doesn't respond, they go into a deep, deep depression, and they're like, he hasn't returned my texts and calls, and I thought he loved me. I met him on Match.com, and we, slept together. I got intimate physically too soon, I guess, and now I never hear from the guy, and he's moved on to 20 new people on Match.com. But in this online age, love addiction is such a huge issue. People get sexual very quick sometimes online, and then they get in these toxic relationships. So Ozzy said we can go off the rails on the crazy train. What do you do if you go off the rails? What do you do if you're having problems finding a real relationship, or you're hurting, you're in withdrawal from a relationship? We'll be back in about 20 seconds with Lori Jean Glass. You can find her website at Lori Jean, L-O-R-I, Jean, J-E-A-N. She's the best person I've found out there talking about this. And you can see a lot of her talks on there. We'll be back in about 25 seconds with Lori Jean Glass. Don't go anywhere. Love addiction. Right back. Welcome back to Richard Rossi Live, and welcome, Lori Jean. I'm so grateful you came on the show to talk about this today.
Oh, it's good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're most welcome, Lori Jean. I like that you have two names. It makes me think of a nostalgic era when women used to always go by their first and, is it a first and middle name?
It's actually a first and middle name, but referred as my name. I'm originally from West Virginia, so it's very common to have two
names.
Yes,
it is.
Yeah.
And my grandmother, my Nana, was from West Virginia. It is. That's what it made me think of. Where in West Virginia were you from?
I'm from a little town. Well, my dad actually grew up in Gallagher, West Virginia, and my mom was from Charleston, West Virginia. So, yeah, my roots are in West Virginia. We moved there when I was very young. To Virginia, so I still say I'm from West Virginia.
Well, it's so interesting to come from West Virginia and now to be, so brilliant in the work you do with relational withdrawal that we're talking about today. I've read that you said your own journey brought you to this work. They say most of us that get into studying counseling or psychology or anything like that, where there's a part of us trying to help heal ourselves and our own, isolation, our own issues. How did you get so interested in this work?
Well, I got interested in it because I really stumbled into it. What happened for me is that I got sober off of alcohol about 20 years ago, and when I was about 2 years into my sobriety, I was literally on the crazy train. And when I use the term crazy train, what I'm referencing is that I was writing these relationships with complete unawareness and having behaviors like, tolerance for high-risk behavior, and I was mistaking intensity for intimacy, and my world didn't feel better inside. It felt worse because I no longer had the alcohol to manage and tolerate my feelings. And what I realized is I had deep attachment wounds that were really guiding my relationships. I was basically a stage 5 Klingon in most of my relationships because I had a lot of childhood trauma and drama that had been untreated. I was treating symptoms. I wasn't treating the underbelly of the root of how I was attaching in the world relationally. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it sure does, and you've really piqued my interest tremendously when you mentioned that you mistook intensity for intimacy. And that's like a $20 million statement right there, because how do we know the difference? I mean, I grew up in the bars of Pittsburgh, not far from where you're from, your neighboring state in Pennsylvania, Western Pennsylvania, and all the great romantic songs that I would play in the bars as a kid, you know, all the great love songs, you know, they were all about this intensity of falling in love. You know, I can't live if living is without you, you know, and songs
oh,
like
yeah.
that. You know? So how do you
want to know what love is?
Yeah, I want to know what love is. Oh, my God, I'm about to grab my guitar right now. You know, I want you to show me. Yeah, oh, I used to play that song over and over,
yeah.
Foreigner. So, I mean, isn't falling in love intense, or how do you know when it's intensity but not intimacy? Because I've read in a book I was reading from the library, Facing Love Addiction, the author of that book claims that the two root fears are with love addiction. We fear abandonment and we fear real intimacy. How did you figure out they were different, or how are they different?
Well, this is a long answer, so I'll take a stab at it. First of all, every person that I work with this topic being one that needs to be addressed, I find that the most important factor is individualization. Like, people, there's no stock answer. Because mm-hmm. people that struggle relationally come from all different walks of life. They have very different wounding. You know, my father drowned when I was a little girl.
He
was a basketball star in West Virginia until Jerry West came along and took out all of his records. And you know, we were there on the banks of the Potomac River, and, you know, I was burst into a very secure attachment with my caregivers, i.e. mom and dad. And when he drowned, everything changed. I lost my father, which instilled what I call an abandonment button. And I lost my mother because she became very neglectful and started drinking alcohol to manage and tolerate the trauma. So, you know, years later, when I found myself being diagnosed with a term called love addiction, it made absolute no sense to me, because all I ever really wanted was love. I craved it, yet I couldn't manage and tolerate it when it came to me because I didn't trust people. So I would get into relationships and create intensity so that they would have to prove themselves to me. I call it protest behavior. Like, you have to give me positive regard. Like, you know, instead of just gently getting to know people slowly and seeing if they would be an appropriate and a right fit for me, I would go in guns a-blazing, which is the intensity, not intimacy, with this almost like, when I was young, I was, you know, pretty, and I would use that as a way to lure people into my pain and throw them on crazy train with me until it crashed and literally take people hostage. However, Richard, it's important to understand that when people are doing that, they are not aware of it. They really have these bleeding hearts that really want to love and connect.
Mm.
So there's a big disconnect there because they're not really aware of the intensity around them. And oftentimes it gets diagnosed as anxiety disorder, which means there's medication to be had, which means the root cause doesn't get treated. Are you following me?
Yes. Yeah, it's really powerful stuff. Wow. So I've heard people talk about instant intimacy, that sometimes when we have these attachment abandonment stuff growing up, in your case, sadly, you lost your dear daddy as a little girl. And many of us have those kind of abandonment stuff growing up. So we can become apparently intimate or intensely sharing of ourselves quickly, but it's not that real brick upon brick slow. I think that was so wise that you said, as you recover, it's more about slowly getting to know someone rather than, oh my God, we have this instant bond, and And then there's that thing couples do where every little thing they have in common is a sign. Like, oh, my God, you like the band The Beatles, too? What are the chances, you know? And there's
right.
that feeling of – so it's kind of a tricky thing where you're not really sharing the totality of who you are. It's more of this kind of – you're kind of tricked by this intensity in a sense. And then it's set up that this person better not abandon you like it felt like Dad did when you were growing up. Am I understanding right?
Right. Well, what happens is that one of the pieces of curriculum that we teach with Pivot is what we call the whole perspective, and it's to look at oneself and others through the lens of five different areas. And it might sound a little heady for your listeners, but I'll just say briefly that, you know, when you meet someone and you're going in to attach to them relationally, typically people that are wounded are just using how they're feeling emotionally and physically. There's no intellect present. There's a lot, oftentimes spirituality is not present, and oftentimes there's no consideration for how you're going to get along financially. And when I work with individuals or families or couples, I bring in the whole perspective so we can step back and look at it from a intellectual, physical, emotional, spiritual, and financial perspective. It's the basis of the Pivot curriculum. And then you take it into all your different areas of how you are relationally, and then you can kind of see where things line up and where things don't line up. The dating module is one of the most popular modules that we do at Pivot because people are, you know, hitting walls because they're just getting tired of continually giving themselves to somebody and then feeling discarded. And then that pain body wound, which is the Eckhart Tolle stuff out of the New Earth, gets activated, and then they're laying in their own wound again, wondering why the world is so cruel to them. When in actuality, you know, what they're doing is they're just trying desperately to get this piece corrected and have a corrective experience by somebody, anybody, come in here and please help me love. And that's where we run into major problems. Does you follow me?
Yeah, that's powerful stuff. And those of you listening can learn more about this at lovetopivot.com and lorijean.com. You mentioned the attachment issues. So when we, let's say our mom and dad can't give what they don't have, they weren't nurturing, they weren't loving, and there's this hole inside of us. Am I understanding right that then there's, we're not that good at attaching in a healthy way, and so is that where maybe that clinging kind of codependent thing comes in, you know, like that scares people away eventually, the person that, you know, you haven't returned my text, it's been a really long time, it's only been an hour, for God's sake, that kind of thing, you know. Is that attachment thing seems to be at the base from what you're saying of this love addiction, huh?
Oh, absolutely. Most often, not always. Sometimes it can be a result of trauma. Say someone, you know, had a really bad traumatic event happen and they were beaten and raped or something like that in their adolescence. When they, you know, adolescence is the time we're supposed to individuate. And if someone doesn't have an opportunity to do that thoroughly because they have untreated trauma, that can also be problematic when they're going to attach later. But typically, the attachment wounds do come from early childhood attachment. Not always, though. Not always.
You mentioned the pain body and Eckhart Tolle's pain body concept, which when we're hurt and have these kind of traumas or abandonment, that it can actually become part of our physical body. It makes me think of a scripture in Romans that talks about the sins committed against us dwelleth in our members, our physical members, our body. Have you seen in your treatment of love addicts that sometimes there's actual physical problems as a result of these things?
Oh, there's tremendous physical problems. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, sexual dysfunction, hyperactivity, self-neglect, fatigue, migraine headaches. I mean, the list goes on and on. Absolutely. You know, it's very interesting what happens. And, you know, I personally don't really like the term love addiction.
Mm-hmm.
I don't
use
it.
Tell me why you don't like that term.
Yeah, I don't. I use it to meet people where they're at because that's the term that they recognize. But the reason why I don't like the term is because, you know, it's not love that they're addicted to.
Mm-hmm.
It's not love that they're addicted to. What the state of consciousness that one is in when they're acting out is desire. They're in a state of desire. They want something so bad that they are in a state of desire. And let me explain that. So, you know, love in and of itself, there's a reverence to it. You know, it's a revelation you're having. It's a loving act that you're giving one another. That's not the thing you're addicted to, because many people aren't there in these relationships.
Mm.
Like most people when you meet, like you'll meet somebody and they can't leave a relationship when they're being beaten or the person's an addict or they're neglectful. They can't get out of these relationships because it's in the leaving that the pain body gets activated, that the original wound gets activated, the abandonment and neglect. So instead of feeling that, they'll stay in a relationship that they can tolerate because we're drawn to what's familiar regardless of merit. So let me drive that home. So my mother started drinking after my father died, and that was her coping mechanism. We call it survival patterns. We call it survival patterns. So her survival pattern in order to be able to get up every day was to have a few drinks so she could deal with life because she had this untreated trauma. Well, when I became a teenager, she could no longer handle it anymore. Her alcoholism had progressed, and she ended up killing herself.
Mm.
So when I would get into these relationships later in life, I would get into these relationships with people that needed me to save them.
Mm.
And so
was there a dynamic of you wanting to save your mom, Lori Jean?
Oh, absolutely. I used to dump her alcohol bottles down the drain, and my stepfather would you know, hit me for it. Oh, yeah, I wanted to save her. Of course I wanted to save her.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't save my dad. I had to save my mom. I mean, most kids that grew up in an alcoholic home spend some time in that process trying to fix what they think is broken.
Yes, and that becomes self-destructive to us eventually. You know, my dad was in and out of mental hospitals, and I was the oldest of five, and so I just totally had to be the hero and the savior, and I became a minister and trying to save the world without saving myself, and that had some very bad consequence for me. And so were you drawn to people relationally, you know, until you figured some of this out? Were you attracted to people that you became the nurturing, rescuing person for?
Sometimes, but what was interesting for me was I had my father's abandonment and my mother's neglect. So sometimes I would go in wanting to rescue, and sometimes I would go in wanting to be rescued. So I had what is considered an ambivalent attachment wound.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So I was the come here, go away girl.
Yeah, yeah. So
I was
you,
the come here.
My God, you really played some head games with the people you were dating. Forgive me.
I know.
Oh my God,
okay.
Three steps forward, two steps back, Dan. So.
Well, that's why I can help people because I get
yes.
it. Yes. You know.
And by the way,
and
if you need help with this, Lori Jean's website, Lori Jean, Lori Jean, JEAN.com, or Love to Pivot, Love to PIVOT.com. Lori, did I hear right, and forgive me if I misheard, but did I hear right that did you say your mother took her life?
Yes.
Wow. So your dad died when you were young, and your mother took her life. And this is, God, I got to fight back the tears because this stuff is so painful, you know, when we lose these people. As you know, I shared with you my youngest brother just died, and this kind of stuff, it's just, this is really hardcore stuff, and I am so grateful you're on the show. We have so many people I know that are listening and being touched by this. And by the way, if you have a question you want to send in as we're talking, you can email it to Richard Rossi Live or call the number on your screen. And I'll be right back with you, Lori, in just about 10 seconds after a little program identification. And so if anyone wants to email a question to Richard Rossi Live at gmail.com or call the number. This is really fascinating stuff. So can you hang on for a few seconds and talk a little bit more, Lori Jean?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. We will be right back with Lori Jean Glass and talking about the crazy train, getting off the crazy train, relationship withdrawal.
Hey, Chief, you know, there's two things in this world I hate to miss. One's a Lakers game, and the other's Rich Ronci Live. You gotta be cuckoo to miss this show, you know what I mean, pal? And wait till you get a load of what Rich is gonna talk about today.
We're talking about the crazy train. The crazy train of withdrawal. When you're in this kind of relationship, Lori Jean Glass, and by the way, we're with Lori Jean Glass. Her website's Lori Jean, LoriJean.com. When you're going through the withdrawal of stepping back from this intense type of relationship, this withdrawal can be very, very hard. You know, I was reading that the symptoms can include, you know, suicidal thoughts, depression, a lot of really heavy stuff, and it can be... I mean, I heard a presentation by a guy that studies the brain that the same stuff in the brain with meth and drugs that just activates that limbic system of the brain with the dopamine rush and all that we can get the same high from sex, from love, and that the withdrawal when the relationship breaks up or the person is stepping away from us, that this can be one of the hardest things to go through. And have you found that in your practice? What's that been like when you try to help people with that, Lori Jean?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, absolutely. You know, I hit my bottom, you know, sleeping on a doorstep of some guy's, you know, house who wouldn't let me in because we got into a big, huge fight, stone cold sober in a $350 dress 17 years ago, which, you know, was a lot of money. And, you know, just in fetal position, feeling the same pain I felt when I couldn't save my dad. You know, it's very painful because typically what you're experiencing in that relational withdrawal is multiple storylines that are accumulating for one big crash. And, you know, I'm the executive director of clinical operations at Five Sisters Ranch, and what we do is we have programming. You know, the pivot programming is advocates to help you work through your relational challenges. And if it's really bad, where someone is really destabilized, that, you know, you go to places like Five Sisters Ranch to get the help you need, because the withdrawal from it, you know, and not going back to a relationship that might be, you know, hurtful to you, damaging for others, jeopardizing your relationships with family and friends and children, you know, they're often caught in the crossfire. Sometimes you need to go and be treated for it, you know, because...
Yeah.
The relational withdrawal, there's a couple things I want to say about that, and since that's what this show is called, I'd like to speak to it because I think it's crucial for your listeners to hear, is that there's two ways to do withdrawal. You can either prepare for it or you can get thrown into it.
Mm.
And typically if you go and you sit and you talk with someone, whether it's a therapist or a family friend or clergy or whoever you're discussing this with, if the relationship sounds like it's not healthy for you and people to tell you to leave, typically if you leave because other people are telling you to, you won't stay gone. You'll just go right back to it.
Yeah.
And then you get in this co-addictive tango and the shame just gets that much bigger, that much bigger, that much bigger.
And
so,
it seems like when the emotions are involved like that, people, no matter what you tell them, they're so hooked on it that it almost... Forgive me, I almost feel like it's a waste of time to say you really should break up with that person at that point because they're hooked into it.
Well, it's not a waste of time because you can't, you don't want to enable the people, but what you need to do is tell them, look, you're in danger and I can't talk to you about this anymore. I really encourage you to get help.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you got to set that boundary sometimes if people are sounding crazy and just repeating the same stories over and over again. I know looking back when I had my big shift, it was the people that were bold enough to say to me, you know, Lori Jean, you know, your children are being affected here. Like, you know, this is not healthy. You're going to lose your job, you know. And looking back, those people were the people that really cared, not the
people
that enabled me. But what I want to share that's important is that there's actually a way to prepare for withdrawal. You know, and the first is that you need to get the right support. Like if you know a relationship isn't right for you, but you don't know how the heck to get out of it, you got to work with people that really understand attachment. That's why, you know, Five Sisters Ranch or a pivot coach, if you can't get away for a week or two or don't have the money, work with somebody that can help you see your patterns. Like I really wished back then somebody would have really been able to help me connect all the dots. I didn't realize that when I was calling somebody 38 times in a row that I was on a lifeline calling my mom, begging her not to die. It was the same energy I was bringing forth. It was the same energy I was bringing forth in this relationship, trying to have a corrective experience with a storyline that had absolutely nothing to do with my mom, but it sure felt like it in my infrastructure. And if you met me in person, like, I'm very smart. Like, you would think I would realize that in the moment. But when you're caught up in all of it, you don't realize it in the moment. You know, you don't know. So the first thing you need to do is get the right support, and then you want to learn how to observe the relationship you have to the partner. And then the next step is to really identify the original wound. Is it similar to what you're feeling in the relationship? Then you can create a plan for yourself to provide safety, and then you want to leave the relationship. Like, you don't want to just leave the relationship, because if you leave the relationship, unless you're being physically hurt, you're just going to go get another relationship that's just like the last relationship you were in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's
because
like
we're drawn
married,
to what's familiar.
I have a family member that's married about 8 times, and they keep marrying the same woman 8 times in a row.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, we don't realize it when we're in it. You don't realize it when you're doing it. And yet all the light bulbs start coming on. That's why when I'm saying if it's really an acute case, coming and doing like the 1 week Strength of Heart program at Five Sisters, which is for men or women, not at the same time, is a really good 1 week intensive. And I don't want this show to sound like I'm trying to sell your listeners on a bunch of stuff, but I just want them to know that the resource is there. You know, I want them
to
know that the
away.
Resource is there, because when I went and got help, I was treated for, quote, love addiction, unquote, and I left feeling like I was a bigger problem than I felt going into the work. Like, for me, the solution isn't to sit on your hands and never look at anybody again. That's not learning how to be relational. I needed to learn how to be relational and not let the pain body wounds get so activated that it would drive me to people that weren't safe for me.
Well, you have made a remarkable journey, and I'm so glad you're helping others with it. By the way, I want to recommend any of you that really have been trapped in this cycle to consider going away for a week or two to Five Sisters Ranch. It's fivesistersranch.com. And, you know, I've had a few times in my life where I went away from all the stress to get help for different things, and it made all the difference in the world. This is really something worth considering. We have a question coming in here from Matt. Matt is sending in a question from Virginia about technology. Matt says his sister, who is in her 40s and single, has been caught in a cycle of meeting guys online, having sex with them, hoping it will turn into a relationship. It never seems to become a relationship. She gets used over and over again. Does the technology make this worse? It seems like it does with my sister. What about the whole online thing of these women that I call them predators, these online male predators meeting women online, and these guys are just playing tons of women, and then the woman's hoping that it turns in. I don't know if it's true or not, but I once had a pastor friend when I was growing up that said that a lot of women play at sex to get love, and a lot of men play at love to get sex. Of course, that's a generalization, not true for everybody. But it sounds like his sister is out there and, you know, sleeps with these guys that she meets online. And then, as he describes this, it's rather long. I'm not going to read it all, but he describes it that then she's depressed because they sleep with her and then abandon her. And she's, he said she goes through this cycle with literally, it seems like, a different guy every month. So the technology, is it making it worse, do you think?
Well, personally, let me tell you how I feel about technology.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going away.
True.
We need to learn to have a different relationship with it, and it starts one person at a time. So in this case, it would be Matt's sister's responsibility to want to change, because we can't change these predators online.
No. And they're going to be out
there. I mean, I
wish
I could. Trust me, I'd get them all in a room and sit down and have an LJ talk with them, but that's not going to happen. So what I would say to Matt, and Matt, if you're listening, that first I want to explain to you that what happens with technology is that people go out on a hunt. You know, your sister, if I'm speaking directly to you, you know, she's looking for connection.
Mm-hmm.
She's looking for a connection, and technology is easy because you can do it all day long at home. And so when you're on this hunt, then what happens is when you find something, you initially start to flirt, and the flirting leads to sexting quickly because you can hide behind the technology. And then later it becomes social. So where we used to socialize first to meet people, now it's completely done a 180. The socialization of two people coming together comes at the last step now. Because it's very easy, and I know this is a radio show, I don't want to say anything that's disrespectful, so I'll watch my language here, but the truth of the matter is the sexting and what people actually say, it's very easy to type those letters into a cell phone. Typically, those people wouldn't be that willing to say those words face-to-face, eyes-to-eyes, initially,
yeah,
until they got to know somebody. So the technology, that's where it's doing a disservice. One of the things that people don't have the time or money to go away that one can do with a pivot advocate is we have a module called the dating game. And what we actually do is we teach people how to understand what they're putting out there, be responsible for it, have a list of questions that they need to ask based on their whole perspective, which I talked about earlier, and then we help them define their non-negotiables. So we actually can help people walk through this whole process. And, you know, I have been to many weddings as a result of this process. Like, people actually know how to vet people a little more carefully based on the individualization piece of who they are and what they want and need in a relationship. Therefore, their ability of finding someone that they can attach more securely to using technology is the odds are much greater that they're going to find that. Where most people just get in there and it's like the wild, wild west of relating now.
Mm.
No idea what's on the frontier.
Yeah, and I find another aspect, it seems, because the intimacy issue and the attachment issues come up, to be able to really bond and have real intimacy and not just intensity, that people relying on technology so much, some of the younger folks, like our kids' age in the 20s, I find some of these guys, they show up for an actual physical date, and they, of course, we're all nervous on a date, you know, to begin with. But it seems like to actually talk is a lost art, the romance of actually having a talk and bonding with someone, because everything is texting. It seems like particularly guys, to speak against my own gender, can hide behind the text wall. And I've heard many stories where they tell the girl right out. I mean, they don't want to really talk on the phone. I'm not into calling. I'm not into actually talking. Let's just text.
And they hide behind that
thing where they're not really even talking.
Yeah, and that's I can appreciate the comment, and, you know, it's equal. Men and women do it. All people do it. You know, all genders do it. It's across the board now. There's not one more so than the other. And that has a lot to do with how, you know, that's another show, Richard. We have a parenting module. That's about parenting. The
wow.
environment that you're growing up in, you know, one of the things at Pivot that we teach is that every family should have a charging station and a cell phone box. And I encourage families at a very young age that when they're having meals together, everyone, including the parents, put their phones in the cell phone box.
Excellent.
And when they're going to sleep at night, everybody, including the parents, charges their technology at the family charging station.
That is fantastic. I want the whole world to hear this because the parents model it, you know. I was at a restaurant recently with these two adorable little boy and girl, reminded me of our son Josh and daughter Karis when they were little, and just trying to get mom's attention, and mommy, hi mommy, look at this, now look at me coloring this, mommy, and the mom on the cell phone the whole time ignoring the kids. So it hurt me, it brought back my abandonment wounds because it made me think of being a kid and wanting someone to nurture me and pay attention, and so I was so mad at this mom. But also I was thinking, she's teaching them this. She's teaching them it's not important to be present with who you're with.
That's right, yeah. And we see that everywhere. You know, we see that everywhere. And we all know it's a problem, but what are we doing about it, right?
I love the cell phone box idea. I'd like to see that at movie theaters, put them all in the box, check it like you check your coat, because, you know, anymore I go to a movie and the lights all through the theater are distracting my eyes from the screen, or it plays. I've been an actor on stage where in the middle of a dramatic scene we hear a phone ring in the audience. It seems like we're fighting something that's so hard to fight, but at least on a family level with your parenting module, you're teaching parents to do that. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I try to look at it as, you know, if we look at it as a fight, people won't engage in it. You know, we have to just look at really doing what we're doing right now, which is educating people. Educating people on, you know, what comes later. Because when you're in it, when you're doing it, it doesn't feel like you're creating harm. Like, that, you know, the mother is exhausted and she's going somewhere and unfortunately, the babysitter couldn't come, so she has to take her kids with her to the hairdresser, and then they get the iPad so that she can at least get her hair washed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's a lot of compassion, and I can understand how and why parents and people are using technology as a pastime, but it's just so different. I was at an airport recently, and I was sitting there, and it was very quiet, and I recall looking around. It was a busy airport, and as we were waiting for the announcement to get in line to board the plane, it was with Southwest Airlines, there was not one person waiting to get on that plane that wasn't on their cell phone.
Wow.
There was not one conversation happening.
Wow.
And it really struck me, you know, and it's not a judgment. It was really more of an observation, you know. It was just really an observation, like, this is what all of us are doing. This is what we're all signing up for.
Mm.
So at some point in time, perhaps maybe there'll be a shift in it. Like, look how many years we drove cars without seatbelts, right?
Yeah.
How many years did we drive cars without seatbelts before we finally realized, we might want to put seatbelts in?
I fell out of the car as a boy, Lori Gina, several times without a seatbelt on, and my dad stopping the car, you know, going back, backing up, to pick me up off the street, you know.
Right. So when will we see the next generations wanting to shift around this relationship we have with technology? I have to believe in the spirit of being a human being that they'll come forth and make this happen.
Yeah, let's hope we progress and evolve to a higher level. I was hearing my son's band play in Santa Monica, and we were watching him, and I went up to the bar to get my wife a Coke, and at the bar they were lined up, you know, 25 shoulder-to-shoulder people. And like at the airport with you, Lori Jean, not one conversation. They're all looking down at the phone. I couldn't believe it. Because I grew up in the whole Cheers era, you know, where the bar is somewhere where everyone knows your name, you know, and everyone's talking and relating. No more. It was like they're all looking at the phone, you know.
Yeah. It's really fascinating. And so I'm all about just educating people on that, you know.
Let me ask you, going back to the attachment growing up thing, if you didn't get we mentioned the abandonment. In your case, sadly, your dad died when you were a little girl in West Virginia, and you lost your mom as well. In my case, my dad was bipolar and couldn't give what he didn't have, so he could either go off his meds, lithium or thorazine, or drink excessive alcohol with his meds and then could get really crazy. And so when we grow up with parents that aren't able to give us that approval, that affirmation, it can be really hard, because when someone else doesn't give us that approval or affirmation or love, it just ties into that old thing. And it really takes some work to not internalize rejection or judgments or criticism. Me as a creative person, and I put myself out there with creative things, and sometimes they're controversial. And I noticed that sometimes when people are critical, it's like such a deep wound, and it's somehow tied back to, you know, dad and mom maybe not being able to give that when I was growing up. How do you become more, I don't know what the word would be, self-contained or not so needing? You know, Wayne Dyer used to say wanting others' approval and love but not needing their approval.
Yeah, I can answer that. You know, one of the things that we do in the Pivot curriculum is teach people how to understand the different parts of self. Like, for example, like the little girl inside of me, the inner child work, the John Bradshaw work, right? Mm-hmm. The knowing when I'm getting activated from that perspective, and that's a very desperate, that was a very desperate side of Lori Jean, you know, where I would drive across town before we had cell phones, just to drive by somebody's house to, if they were home, to make sure that he was telling me the truth, because I didn't trust love, you know.
Wow.
That's that little girl in me, whereas, you know, another survival pattern I had is that when I became an adolescent, I became very aggressive. So that part of me would go to any lengths to make sure that, you know, that person would not leave me. So I would create that protest behavior I talked about early on. You know, you have to work through it. It's a big question. What I can tell you is that what we do is we take people through what I call the relational alignment. Mm-hmm. And in that module, there's the survival patterns, the healthy adult, and the relational alignment. And the whole process of that piece of the curriculum is to get people to become responsible for thinking and feeling and doing congruently at their highest good, understanding that they're responsible for those old feelings and wounds when they come up, and learn how to be able to correct them on the spot. Because at the end of the day, nobody else can do it for you. And, you know, you can have a strong relationship with God, and you can have a strong, you know, support group, and you can have a, you know, kick-ass ninja therapist. However, you know, if you don't have some methodology that you can relate to and some internal system that you can utilize in the moment, then I always say, you know, if you can't access it at the mall or at a sporting event or at a wedding or a family function, then you're probably going to get deregulated and end up back on crazy train. So it's all about empowering yourself to be able to understand. Like, I can feel, Richard, when that abandonment starts coming up for me, you know. I use this, I'll leave your listeners with this really cool story. So how much time do we have?
You know, right now I just asked for a little more. We're supposed to be gone in a minute, but do you want to stay a few more minutes? Because it feels like we might have maybe a last thing or so to say. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm open to staying.
Okay. Why don't you not feel rushed then, even though they're telling us we got 60 seconds, because they're really nice and they'll give us grace to go over.
Okay, so really quick. So my partner of 11 years, he is a race car driver.
Mm-hmm.
And this last year, he got a huge, you know, opportunity to race with a Honda team. And so he's been gone a lot this year, like
Wow.
a lot.
Pretty exciting profession your partner has, huh?
Very exciting. Mm-hmm. And so he's gone, and about 3 months into this year, he asked me to drive him to the airport early in the morning, like 4 a.m. And so I told him I would, and I got up at 4 a.m., and we're 3 months into this new part of our relationship, which consists of he's gone, you know, a good, you know, 2.5-3 weeks out of the month. So off he goes, and I'm driving him to the airport, and he says to me, quote, "You know, LJ, I know this is hard on you. It's hard on me, too, and it would be really great if when I leave, you know, you could just give me a big smile and a hug." Because he was picking up on the fact that I was sad that he was leaving again.
Mm-hmm.
And I responded to him with this statement. I said, "You know, the little girl in me is super sad that you're leaving.
Aw.
And the adolescent in me wants to tell you to shut the F up. And the adult in me doesn't really quite know what to do. But what I can tell you is the healthy adult will Skype with you tonight and we'll have a great conversation. How does that sound?" And he had a big smile on his face. I took complete responsibility for the fact that I was not feeling regulated. I didn't have to put it on him and make him leave with it. I was able to give him a kiss when he got out of the car.
That is brilliant.
And manage and tolerate my own feelings, because the truth of the matter is we do get activated. Those pain bodies do get activated. It's just that through the systems that I've created, I know what to do, and I know how to teach other people how to learn to manage and tolerate their own feelings based on who they are and where they come from. Does that make sense?
It sure does. So the little girl was really sad and upset. The teenager wanted him to F off. The adult could have an adult conversation with him. Is that what the adult, was doing or wanted to do?
Exactly. The adult was having a conversation with him, and the healthy adult Skyped with him that night.
The healthy adult what?
The healthy adult called him and Skyped with him that night and had a great conversation.
Great. We have one last question. We went over our time, so the live listeners, some of them, the recording dropped out. However, this link is good in perpetuity for replay, so this extra couple minutes when they replay it after we're done, they will get our extra couple minutes. But we had another question sent in from Alexis in Ohio, and she said that she's went to some groups for love addiction and sex addiction, and they talk about how the higher power will help them, God, and fill the hole. But she said she really struggles with will God fill the hole, and wanted to get our opinion on that. And that's a question for me, too, that I wanted maybe we can finish with, because, in trying to save my dad from his bipolar and in and out of mental hospitals, Lori Jean, I got involved as a teenager and became a born-again Christian with the church. And some of the people in the church, Lori Jean, were saying, okay, Richard, in Acts 16:31, it says, "Believe on the Lord Jesus Christ, thou shalt be saved in thine house." So if you give it all to God, he's going to save your dad, he's going to save your family. And it was that sort of thing, that God would fill all the holes, God would solve everything. And God and spirituality and walking with the Lord and turning our will and lives over to higher power has been a big part of my life. However, if I were to be completely honest, Lori Jean, even though I stood up as an evangelist and had thousands of people convert because I said to come up to the and ask Christ in your life and that God-shaped hole will be filled, my experience, and I don't know if I'm doing it wrong, but my experience is that God does fill some of the hole in me, but there still are holes sometimes. And even in Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden in that story, even Adam was lonely even though he walked and talked with God and all that. So, I mean, to what extent do you think the spiritual part, I mean, can it completely fulfill the need for a lover? I wrote and directed a film called Sister Amy, and there's a line that many people told me they loved in that film where Sister Amy in the film says, "Yeah, I had God, but God couldn't hold me. He couldn't put his arms around me physically. So I had God during the day, and I had David at night." So, I mean, what are your thoughts on the whole higher power, God fills the whole thing?
Well, I love how you threw that on me when I have a minute left. That's a tall question, and I'll do
my best to answer it.
I'll do my best to answer it. Again, it's why individualization is so important. Mm-hmm. I know that for many, you know, God is good. The message of God, the feeling of God, when you can feel mm-hmm. the Holy Spirit, when you have a higher power, when you're an addict, you know, Buddha delivers a great message. You know, I mean, there's so many different walks of life of how people use the term God. So first I'd mm-hmm. have to understand how that person was using the term.
Mm.
Then what I would do is I would take a look at if there's a severe attachment wound, the core belief that someone with an unhealthy attachment believes is that they're not enough and they don't trust.
They're not enough and they don't trust.
That's right. So when they're offered something as beautiful as a relationship with God, their first reaction deep down is going to be, I'm not sure I can trust it. I don't know if I can trust it. It's a tall order. It's one of the things I do some talks occasionally in different types of school landscapes, whether it's a Christian church or whatever. And you know, I always invite people that are inviting people to a way of life that they've found is fulfilling, that if you're working with somebody with attachment wounds, trauma, or addiction, you know, the invitation needs to be served up a little bit different, because the fact that they're just supposed to believe and feel it is a false positive. It won't happen that fast. They need to give those people time. They need to give us, you know, room. They need to help us with that process and not shove it down the throats of others.
Mm.
So to answer your the person that wrote in, what I'd like to say to her is that, you know, can it be helpful? Absolutely. Absolutely. But in the dark of the night, you know, like you're lying in your movie, you know, you sometimes don't feel it because the core abandonment wound of not trusting takes time. However, like any other relationship, it's why the spiritual piece is part of the whole perspective for, you know, the curriculum, is that, you know, you can learn how to have that relationship. I created a relationship with the God of my choice, you know, by having a journal specifically devoted to God. And
I love that.
I wrote to God every single day, and I shared unconditionally about how I was really feeling when I was in relational withdrawal. You know, 17 years ago, I had a huge start of a shift. It's not a straight line. I wish I could tell you that, you know, I didn't fall down at all. I did fall down a few times, but it was the start of developing the relationship, because typically people like us that have wounds, it's hard to forgive ourselves. It's hard to forgive ourselves, you know, and I always say, you know, we have to take ourselves down off the cross, you know.
Wow. This is so powerful. We're gonna have to have you back because, oh, my God, I've never had anyone. I'm getting a lot of messages in. I keep getting a two-word message from our listeners coming in again and again and again. Love her, love her, love her. So you are really loved here by everyone listening. But this thing about how even God with our attachment issues, it's hard to take in God's love and trust it, that is deep, because, you know, we're told in the Christian world he's this loving father, and if we had a father that was a little bit whack, that's hard to trust. But, oh, my God, we're so over time, and I'm worried we're going to be cut off here. But I really appreciate you coming on, Lori Jean. And by the way, LoriJean.com is the website, LoriJean.com. Thank you.
And I wanted to tell you, I'm super excited. I just finished a book proposal for The Crazy Train.
Yay!
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Tell me when it's out so you can come on and we can talk about it.
Yeah.
When do you think it'll come out?
Oh, I don't know. It's been a labor of love. I've been trying to put this thing together for years. I have a lot of it already written.
I'm feeling 2018 it's coming out, Lori Jean.
Yep. I think so. Yeah.
Is it going to be called Getting Off the Crazy Train? What's your working title?
Just The Crazy Train. And then
it'll have
a subtitle that I'm sure whoever picks it up, the publisher, will want to have an opinion about, I'm sure.
Wow, well, that's fantastic, Lori Jean. Well, blessings to you and everyone at FiveSistersRanch.com. And I've learned so much. You're brilliant.
Aw, that's so sweet. Thank you, Richard. Thanks for having me, and I'll look forward to our next conversation.
I am, too. Please let me know when you're ready with the book, too, because I'd like to promote it and, you know, let people know about it and have you come back on about that, too.
Absolutely. Will do.
Okay, God bless you.
Thank you. Likewise.
And God bless all of you for listening. And, by the way, next Saturday, September 16th, you want to find out if heaven's real or you want to explore that? I have a guest coming on, Crystal McVeigh, next Saturday, the 16th, 11 a.m. Pacific. Waking Up in Heaven is her book. So she was what they call clinically dead for a while. Says she saw heaven. I know you've heard quite a few of those stories probably out there. She seems pretty credible to me. She's a very nice person, a teacher, a mom. I got turned on to her book by my aunt. I was visiting my dear Aunt Margie in Florida, and she was reading the book and said, Richard, I think you'd enjoy reading this. She wrote down the title for me. And I love my Aunt Margie, and anything she recommends, I'm going to do. So I'm having Crystal McVeigh on my show next Saturday to talk about heaven. So, hey, I hope you got some help with the crazy train. And thank you for turning in to Richard Rossi Live. Go with God and be blessed.